back to Classical Guitar Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams. And today on the show, it's Ahmed Dickinson. Ahmed is from Havana, Cuba. He currently lives in London, England. He has played a lot with Eduardo Martin. He's got a lot of interesting chamber ensemble projects going. And he is also an outstanding soloist. So it's great to have him on the show. The show is sponsored by SavageClassical.com. That's S-A-V-A-G-E, classical.com. Richard Sage is the boss over there. And if you go to his 2,500 square foot spacious classical guitar shop, which is located in South Shore of Long Island, he'll hook you up with the guitar of your dreams if you tell him I sent you. How about the 2012 Manuel Contreras 10th Anniversary No. 2 Spruce Coco Bolo? That's only $14,000, folks. If you hover over it, it just says add to cart. Just throw that in the cart. Get the now and later. Get some toilet paper. Throw it in the cart. Let's get out of here, kids. You can also give them a call. That's 631-335-5447. He also, right next to the Contreras, he has a 1971 Herman Hauser II. But you're going to have to call for details, it says. It's not just going to let you walk out of here with that. They're going to ask you to do a favor for them one day if you buy that guitar. Yeah, they won't tell you when it's happening, but it'll happen. And the only answer is yes. We're also sponsored by rosettapodcast.com/insider. That's rosettapodcast.com/insider. You got to do the /insider. If you don't, I don't see a nickel from rosettapodcast.com/insider. rosettapodcast.com/insider is where you can go to learn the language of your choice, support the show, and probably do a couple of other things for as little as $8 or $9 a month. I don't know. It goes up like a dollar every time I talk about it. But that's what you got to do if you want to learn French or Mandarin or any of the other languages besides those two. I'm sure there are more than two languages in the world. And you can learn every single one of them. You can spend every waking moment of your life gearing up for that moment when you're going to be able to communicate with someone in German. It's going to happen. But you got to go to rosettapodcast.com/insider. So you don't just stand there with your guidebook or talking into your Google Translate and trying to order a cheeseburger in Hamburg. I thought that was going to work better than it did. It didn't work out at all. So that's what's going on. Those are the sponsors. That's it. All right. Not making too much money over here. So if you want, you can go ahead and donate to the show. Now's the time to do it. All right. I got a new album coming out. The website's going to look different, but if you want to donate to the show now and take one last glimpse at Little Bretty Fat Face from 2015, you can go over there and take a look at him because I'm getting new pictures. All right. I got a new me. Lost a little bit of weight there. But if you want to look at the old Pac-Man, right? Coming out of a disastrous relationship, just trying to salvage what he can out of this life. You know, and just packing on the pounds there. There he is. I like that guy. BrettWilliamsMusic.com. You go there, you go to the podcast section, you donate on the right to Little Bretty Fat Face so he can buy more of his favorite foods. what? So yeah, no, anyway, it is going to change because I do have a new album coming out. It's called 7 Original Pieces for Solo Guitar. That's it. That's what it's called. I had a couple of names for it. I forgot what I was going to call it. What was I going to call it? Look at me when I'm talking to you. You know, I don't know. I decided to keep the names kind of fun. My friend Nico did all the artwork for it. So each piece is going to have a piece of art, album art that's attached to it. Nico Trout is the artist. He's a good friend of mine, New York artist here. And I kept on trying to do this, the art myself, because I didn't want to wait around for anybody. You know, every time I get another human being involved in something that I'm doing, it adds a month to whatever I'm doing. So I was just trying to get the artwork done, you know, within a couple of days. And I just wasn't doing well. I just have to admit to myself that I'm 43. I'm not cool, you know? I mean, I'm cool for a 43-year-old, but I'm not cool. I don't have to be. So my cool friend, Nico, he helped me out. He was like, no, you can't. This isn't good. You have to. So then he showed me what he did. I was like, what are you talking about? This is great. I thought what I was doing was great. And then he did it. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's what a real artist can do. So I'm real excited. I'm as excited about the music as I am about Nico's artwork. Nico's one of my closest friends too. So it was great. And of course the old website, if you like what's going on there, a big shout out to Paul Falcone, who's done my website for this album and the one from 10 years ago. He's been my buddy and he's always been there for me in a variety of ways, not just in building websites, but every time that something bad happens to me, he's one of the first people I call. Little Polly poop pants over there. So that will be out. It's submitted to the publisher. It'll be out like a week or two, maybe three. I don't know. We'll have to see. I submitted through CD Baby. I know that's probably not cool. I know there's probably some really cool thing now that you're supposed to submit to for digital distribution. Not something with the word compact disc in the name, but that's who I've been with forever. That's what me and old Giacomo were with in 2006, and we're sticking by it, the old CD Baby for digital distribution. So that's what's going on. I recorded the album in my apartment, in my roommate's room. I guess this is turning into a little bit of a self-promotion, but that's just the way it's got to be, I guess, right? I mean, I don't know. There's plenty to talk about, and I will talk about it, but I recorded it in my roommate's room when he left of the last apartment I lived in. Which was not the best space to record an album in, but I did it. We did everything we could to salvage it. We used good equipment. I experimented and tried to learn as much as I could about microphone placement. So this is me learning how to record. And I tried to do a little bit of mastering. It was okay. And then the final mastering was done by, of course, David Steinhardt, who's the coolest guy ever and has been there for me since, you know, with the Music History Podcast. You all know him as the host of the Tone Bass Classical Guitar Educational Podcast. It's my friends have helped me all the time. Those pictures of Little Brady Fat Face, guess who those were taken by? You'll never guess. Those were taken by Simon, a younger, not as popular Simon Powis took those pictures. That's right. My buddy, you know, so it's all friendship. But the album is only, you know, the album's 25 minutes long. And for all of you little shits out there that are going like, oh, 25 minutes, man, you can't release an album for under 60. Look, that's not true. If you write all your own pieces and they're actually kind of, you know, decent pieces, they aren't just like, you know, long-winded melismas that go nowhere. If you actually write stuff with form and thought in it, it takes a little bit of time. So I felt like I was originally going to get like an hour worth of music. And I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, half of these pieces have been sitting around for 2 or 3 years because I cut my finger and had to have a tendon replaced. And I waited for my pinky to grow back on my left hand. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So I decided to get these things out there. And that's the story of this album. Yeah. So, you know, as far as the Black Lives Matter movement, we're talking a lot about that on the last two shows, about donating half of our proceeds to the NAACP and Integrate New York. And, you know, we are doing that. The other thing that I'm doing is I'm reaching out to leaders in our little industry here. And we're talking about, you know, what they're doing. I'm just sort of kind of asking people what they're doing. And one of the things I was pointed to was by the GFA was sort of a panel that had been held during the convention this summer in June by Connie Hsu, in which she had a panel of guitarists that were going to share their stories about being people of color that were playing this instrument in this environment and sort of share their stories. And that was interesting. And then at the end, they sort of talk about, well, so what can we do about it? And Judicale Perro I think I'm saying his name right. I don't know him personally, but he brought up an interesting point, which was it really is. He was like the cost of education is sort of the big issue, and that's sort of what I keep coming back to. I'm just kind of letting you guys know what's going on. I'm still staying on this as much as I can, but I think him and I sort of came to the same conclusion that it really is education. It's really about getting more people with guitars in their hands. So that's sort of, you know, kind of where I think people are thinking. There haven't been any official statements made yet. You know, I've been assured that when there are official statements from either the GFA or any of the other sort of leading organizations that they would reach out. And everybody got back to me. Everybody was very open about it. You know, I've had like a lot of, you know, sort of catch ups with people, and it's been good. But, you know, I think we're just staying on it, you know. Hoping this show can do whatever it can do to kind of help out with accountability, not necessarily, you know, trying to, you know, call anybody out. There's no one to call out right now for me. That's not the point of it. The point is that just sort of getting the institutions on board. So that's everything. I think that's a good catch up. And I have a great conversation with Ahmed coming up. I hope you guys enjoy it. And again, donate to the show. Let's go ahead. This will be a little summer pledge drive. You could donate to brettwilliamsmusic.com. Take a look at my face one last time. Next time it's going to be a leaner, older face. Not that much leaner. My face stays a perfect circle no matter what happens. And my body's not far behind it. It's just a smaller circle. That's it. All right. Here's my new friend, Ahmed Dickinson.
I would get ahead.
Yeah.
Well, so tell me about the baseball again.
Oh, no, you mean ask you about the baseball? Did you play baseball in Cuba?
Yes, pretty much everybody. You know, like, I'm not going to say everybody, but 95% of the boys would definitely play baseball.
Baseball.
Well, just in the streets.
Stickball, you know, or whatever. Stickball's, yes. Like a New York. Is it? I mean, that might be a New York thing. Is that a Cuban thing too?
Baseball.
Stickball.
Stickball. What's stickball?
You play it with a stick. The rules are, I think they're slightly different. I don't know that much about it. But they play it in New York. I'm in New York. What do you call it?
We call it taco.
Taco?
Taco. Because you can, for example, like broom.
Sweeping a broom,
then you have the whole thing, right? But you can cut three little pieces, like very little, like 2 inches,
yeah.
And with a long piece, then you do that's the bat,
that's
and the other two littles, that's what you throw.
Really? Oh, so you just take a broom and you're just like, we're going to take this broom apart and we're going to make a game out of it.
Yeah, a broken one, a wood one, and that's it. That's how you play.
Wait,
and
so you throw the what? You throw some of it for the broom to hit? So you throw a little piece of the broom and you hit it with the rest of the broom.
Exactly. Or you could use cans.
That's taco.
You know, cans, like a beer can. You could also play with that, squashed. And you throw that, and that's what you...
That's what I played. I used to do that. I used to, like, take a Coke can, crush it, and throw it at things when I was a kid. I could do that for hours. That was my distraction. I would just throw it at a tree. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't call it anything.
There are variations of that. We could also play with a tennis ball,
uh-huh.
But then with a hand.
You're standing a bit... You're standing at base, three bases, the whole play, and you are hitting it with your hand.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. That's great. Everybody can play that. Everybody can catch that. You know, that's not hard to catch a tennis ball. That's easy.
No.
You're not going to hit it too far, so it's not, you know, crazy.
Well.
You got some people that are hitting it hard.
Yeah. Yes.
What was your favorite one to play? I know we're not talking about music, and people are probably going to rip me apart for this, but that's the way it goes. What was your favorite one? Taco, tennis, or?
It wasn't tennis. It was baseball, but with a tennis ball and your hand.
But what was your favorite baseball variation?
I wouldn't know now, because I think when someone managed to get a real bat,
yeah,
and gloves and things, that was like, wow, you know, this is, yes, real. It's in a way, would be a special. It would, yeah, be a special occasion. Not everybody, yeah, you know, had it. But the most important thing was always that, you know, everybody, kids, adults, will be playing it, you know. And that's something that you don't see.
No.
I don't see very often here, you know. I just don't see it.
Where the kids and the adults and grandma and grandpa, everybody, everybody's playing.
Mm.
Well, oh, that's really interesting.
Mainly
men.
Usually. Mainly men, yeah.
But still, I mean, that's true. Yeah, it's usually like the kids are going to do this, the adults are going to do this, the older people are going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case over there in Cuba, huh? It's more, it sounds like people are more always together.
In a way, in my neighborhoods anyway, you know, the communities where everybody know each other,
mm-hmm,
that was the dynamic. You know, you could, you know, spend, you could just, as an adult, you know, just invade the kids' game for
sucks.
A couple of minutes, you know, and then, you know, go about your business. But it was like that.
Did you ever play? Did you ever play one of those games with Fernando? Did Fernando ever surprise you, Maestro Lopez?
Because my school was a good, I don't know, 10 miles away from where I was, what I used to live.
Yeah.
So I had to travel. I had to travel very early. I had to, you know, get up very early and travel and start school at 8 o'clock. As soon as I finish around 4 o'clock, I would jump in a bus and go back to my neighborhood.
Okay, so he was at school. He was an at school teacher. He was a free teacher.
I went to a conservatory, like special education. Basically, I went to a school in which I would spend, you know, I would be out there from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4:20 around that time. In the morning, I would do all the universal subjects, maths, history, etc. And then in the afternoon, I would do history of music, piano, guitar, so far.
And how old were you when this was? I mean, how old were you when you entered? So you're 8 years old and you enter and you're taking music history courses. What kind of music history are they teaching, you know, in Cuba? Is it the same as ours?
The same. Well, it's classical music. So you have to start, you know, you go, you know, Pergolesi, Dido, and Enea.
Yeah.
You go early. And actually, and because I remember we started.
When you're 8 years old, you can't be listening to Pergolesi.
Oh, yes.
Really? When you're eight, like, listen to this.
yes. But the thing is that the way they hook you with is with the instruments.
So they showed you those period instruments?
They show you the sounds coming together. That's the first year. They actually teach you the instruments of each era. And then in the second year, they really go into history and who was who and who did what. But I think it really works, because obviously if you want to do music, and at that time, classical music was the only style, I would say, that you could study in schools. I think that was a very effective way, because obviously we wanted to play a classical instrument. We wanted to play classical music. So we wouldn't be reacting negatively to new sounds or to the sound of those instruments in the environment. The original environment.
Not to mention the vocalist too. I mean, that would be pretty.
Exactly.
If I was an 8 year old, I'd be laughing if I heard, you know, like early music being sung. But that was fun. So that was that sounds, you can continue talking about that for a while, because that is interesting that they, that they did that. And were you able to sort of, obviously, you know, in Cuba, Cuba has a one of the strongest musical traditions in the world. A folk, from like, I'm, you know, for lack of a better term, for a folk or a popular, from a folk or a popular standpoint, it's, you know, its effects have been felt, you know, everywhere from classical music to, you know, rock and everything else. I mean, Cuban music has been very influential. Were you around that at that age too? Did you have family members that were playing sort of the popular music at the same time, or were you just completely immersed in classical?
Yes, that's the case. My father was a scientist, a nuclear physicist, so nothing to do with music. My mother is a languages teacher. But the problem, it's not the problem. The interesting element is that Cuba is a musical place.
Yes. You know,
people express themselves musically. The arts are very, very strong, and there are avenues which you can explore from a very early age if you want to express yourself through a given art. I started doing music when I was four. I went into a singing in a children's choir, and so by the time I was 7, 8, most of the kids who were singing in this children's choir went on to study music, classical music, most of them.
Wow, that's it. Oh, that's crazy.
In a way, it was a natural
progression.
Yeah. Progression, exactly. So if I wanted to go further, what do you do? Okay, go and study music. And that's what I did. Because before that, I was doing music in the children's choir that would be Saturdays and Sundays, but I was already going to a special school for sports.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So before, I started doing music at 8, when I was 8, but between 4 and 7, I was doing the same system, more or less, all the normal subjects in the morning, and then swimming and sports in the afternoon.
Do you feel like that informed you a little bit? Do you feel like that shaped you into a musician? I mean, that because it's sort of the athletic, the element of like practicing,
well,
and trying hard.
My mom was probably making sure that I was expressing myself, and also making sure that I behave. By the time,
yeah, she just wanted you to have something to do.
By the time I hit, you know, 7 o'clock in the evening, I was dead.
So you just wanted to knock you out by 8 p.m. So she
hang out. Yes. I don't remember being awake. I don't remember being awake on weekdays.
Yeah, really. You have no memories of evening.
Weekdays after? No, I don't have memories of that. I have memories of the weekends.
Yeah.
Because on Saturdays we would leave our house around 1 o'clock. No, maybe earlier. We would leave around, I don't know, 11 in the morning, and then travel to this place where we were doing the singing with the children's choir, and I would be back at home at 9, maybe 10 in the evening.
Wow.
That's Saturday gone. Then Sunday I would go and see the senior singers of that choir in the afternoon.
You go see them, like watch them?
Yeah. Yes, because they had like a residence in a really nice place in central Havana. And we would go there and see the grown-ups. Well, not grown-up, but the
high schoolers,
the bigger guys, the high schoolers, singing. There was a lot of music. You know, so I was doing sports, music, you know, lots of things, learning to play chess with my father. I was receiving a lot of information.
Yeah.
But there were lots of things that require focus.
Yeah.
There, all the things that we're doing, you know, I was doing require a lot of, you have to be in the moment. And so that's what my childhood was.
It's amazing. I mean, it sounds like, from the get-go. And you said your mother was a languages teacher. Did she have, and Cuba was a musical place in general, but in your family in particular, did anybody play anything at all?
My mother used to play piano when she was young. And my father played some instruments as well, because they were part of the education, part of their education in the early 50s. But afterwards, you know, she became a teacher. My father became a scientist, and I did grow up with a lot of music in my house. And actually, I did grow up with a lot of interesting music, because my father actually he lived in the Soviet Union for 10 years.
Oh, so he was doing. What kind of work was he doing? Was he doing work for the military, or
no? He was studying that. He went there in the '60s, mm-hmm. and the nuclear physics. And wow. Obviously, there he had the opportunity to listen to a lot of music. There were lots of people from countries in Africa, Eastern Europe, China, Vietnam, and all these students mm-hmm. came with the, you know, LPs, the music from the countries.
Wow.
And
these are all communist countries at the point. So that was a very isolated situation, very unique musical experience.
And my father was able to in a way, gather music from all these countries.
Amazing.
Because he liked, you know, listening to music. So I grew up listening to music from all over the place, because I had all these LPs at home. They are still at home in Havana.
That's amazing. So, that collection of LPs must be so incredibly rare.
Mm,
I mean, you know.
I don't know. Because to me, I don't know. I can definitely see that you have a point in there, but it's just what I grew up with.
Yeah.
And and I guess it helped me create my musical worldview, I guess.
And what do you think your musical worldview is now? Do you do any composing, or did you do composing?
I do composing. Yeah. I do composing, and I'm slightly shy about playing my own thing. I think I've been preparing a few things, because I decided now, after the whole COVID-19 thing, that I want to do also my own things, my own stuff. I've been writing music, but I will also perform.
Yeah, perform your own
thing. And until this time, I hadn't done that, because I felt that there were other things that I was interested in, you know, repertoire that I wanted to learn and promote. But I need to find the balance. I think I'm in a position in which I can now find the balance and keep learning, you know, music, but also exploring my own self and putting some things out there.
And do you think that some of the, like, you're talking about the records, particularly the, you know, the East Asian records, the Vietnamese and the, you know, Red China records, are those things that you are able to, you know, sort of incorporate into your compositions? Do you hear those things?
In terms of melodic and texture, maybe, you know, in terms of structure, maybe.
Mm.
Maybe. You can always insert elements from a, you know, quote unquote, a foreign culture. It is the how and how sensitive you are to it, how clever you are when you marry,
yeah,
you know, what comes with you and what you think it is valuable from the other culture.
Yeah, that's interesting. So that's something that you take into account when you're sitting down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You think about like what you want to take. And you were also talking about, you know, texturally and melodically, no, but formally, yes, mm-hmm. you do hear that. You hear sort of, I'm going to assume maybe like a sort of an open-endedness to it, mm-hmm. more of a prelude than a mm-hmm. than a structure. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's what I would associate more with that music.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, because we have different system, different philosophy,
mm-hmm.
Musically, then we'll have to, I'm not saying dilute, but I would say translate.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Translate the elements in a way that people from our tradition, our culture, because you know I'm from the West,
yeah,
can see at least traces, you know, can have a link or can perceive a link to the original. But I mean that's what you would hope for as a composer. But usually at the end of the creation, people will be able or not to see what you wanted to do. It is it's a difficult, you know, not all the time, not always we are able to put out there to convey the message and people would understand it the way we want it.
Yeah. I mean, and as far as like, yeah, kind of getting out there and conveying messages and stuff like that, you know, you left a country. When did you leave Cuba?
15 years ago. In August would be 15 years ago. Yeah, 15 years.
And how was it leaving there? Were you at that point, were you out on some sort of a artist program or something like that? How did you get out of Cuba?
I had come in 2004. Mm-hmm. I had a choice. I either went to the US and studied in Manis,
mm-hmm.
or came here, and I decided to come here because I had a girlfriend who told me, you know, Britain is better.
Well, that's where I went. I went to Manus. But I do think Britain is great. So you had a girlfriend who I'm going to assume was in Britain?
Yes. Yeah. she was living in Cuba at that time. But mm-hmm. she's British.
Oh, so she liked Britain and she said, you should go to Britain, study in Britain.
Mm. So she's British. She was studying in Cuba. She was living in Cuba.
And so you went to
Royal
College of Music. Yeah. And mm-hmm. who'd you study with there?
With Carlos Bonnell,
mm-hmm.
and with Chris Still.
Oh, okay. So, and how did that, of the Eden Still duo, is that right? Is that
uh-huh,
right?
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. you know, how was your experience going from Cuba, which you had always been in, and going to England, which I assume a lot of Cubans came to New York. It's kind of, you know, it's a home base for, you know.
True. Well, I mean, before coming here, I had traveled a bit, mm-hmm. but I had never lived in a different place.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
And also I had never had this experience in which you have to survive.
You are right.
With a different language, and I felt positively overwhelmed.
Mm.
My fears were drowned by my hopes, always,
mm.
because I was getting so much information. Everything for me was new, you know, from people, buildings, ways of life, smells. So everything was different.
Yeah.
You know, and I was making sure that I'm a bit of a control freak, right? So
yeah,
I always want to understand my surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
So I, from day one, I made sure I tried to make this experience as fulfilling and as possible.
Yeah.
So being able to study with Carlos, with Chris, and some lessons with Gary Ryan, because we had this, you know, platform lessons and things. I was trying to get as much information from them as from the rest of the players, from everybody. And from all my colleagues, you know, all the, my fellow students, because I did play with, I did a lot of chamber music as well. I wanted to do well, and I wanted to understand what was going on.
Yeah.
And get my language as well, kind of. It's a good point, because obviously when I came here, my English wasn't as fluid as it is now.
Well, did your mother try to help you out?
Smiling. No, because my mother, what she did was Russian.
Oh.
That was...
Oh. Well, that's a hit and a miss, Mom. You're not going there. So that's, yeah, that's the thing, is that your parents were sort of steeped in Russian, you know, that's, she spoke Russian and your dad was studying in Russia. Right. That's pretty, that's a lot. And then for you to go to London, what age were you when you, went to London?
Say again?
How old were you when you went to London?
27.
Okay. So you were, yeah, you were going after already doing a lot of work in Cuba. So you were going there for,
I had finished my bachelor degree and had done another 2 years of like social service. So I was, social service. I was, doing, I'm not sure, I think I came here with 25. I was 25 when I came here. Yeah, 25.
Yeah, which it's still scary to come to, especially such a culturally different place from Cuba. I mean, you can't get, you can't get that far. That's about as far as you can get within, you know, the capitalist Western world.
Well, true. But Cuba, I wasn't thinking.
London.
But the thing is, in a way, I was thinking more about my career.
Yeah, you were thinking, because it sounds like you were on the music. You were like, look, all this other stuff, it's confusing. I'm kind of frightened a little bit, but I do understand music, you know, and this place is about music. And that, that you had, you know, obviously since you were 8 years old, you'd been learning about
that's,
music.
That's yeah. what I've been doing. That's what
so
I've,
that was where you could kind of retreat to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That has always been my cocoon.
Yeah, cocoon. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, something you could hide out in when you were sitting there and not understanding what was going on out on the street. Mm-hmm. And then did your girlfriend eventually move back to England?
No, we moved together.
Oh, she. Oh, so you.
That's
guys
the
moved,
reason
okay.
why. Because I could have gone to the. I could have gone to the. To the. To
Is she still around?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so she's your girlfriend or whatever still.
No. We are not. No. We split up a long time ago. But no, she's still around. Yeah.
She's still. She's still alive. So then you know you do this. You come out. In London, you obviously found your place. You seem very comfortable now. What was sort of getting out of school? What did that look like? Did you immediately start performing? Did you have a lot of opportunities? Did you have to create opportunities for yourself? What were sort of the barriers that you felt were in the way?
I was way ahead from
most
of my friends. Why? Because when I finished in Cuba. By the time I was 19, I was studying, right?
Right.
But I was already working. So I was already giving, you know, concerts around the country and working in a guitar orchestra led by Jesus Ortega. So I had the working experience,
yeah,
and the student experience together. Then when I finished my bachelor degree, I continued teaching at the same university I had been studying.
Yeah, that's good. That's nice.
Plus, I continued performing loads. So when I came here, although I knew I had to study, I was already, my eyes were, okay, yes, I have to do well here. I have to do well inside. But I know there is a life outside these walls.
Yeah.
And this is eventually the one I had to grapple with. So,
you have to leave the cocoon, you know?
I had to leave the cocoon, yeah, in a way. Yeah. So, in those 3 years of studies here in London, I was playing 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. Concerts, you know, music societies, hotels, weddings, festivals. I was saying no to no one.
Yeah.
Yes, and then let's see if it works.
Right. Because that is what it's like back then, is you say yes to everything, and then you crash and burn and a couple of times.
And let's see how it works. You know, but I say yes. Let's say I graduated on the 1st of June, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Right. A week later, I was already out with my first album.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that was...
So I had been working...
That was Canciones del Alma?
No, that was playing Nico Rojas. Ahmed Dickinson playing Nico Rojas. That's with a cheesy face.
It's not a cheesy face. It's a good face. The Nico Rojas. Yeah, exactly.
Now, which I had recorded on the previous summer. So I had the rest of my graduation, you know, year doing the artwork and, you know, getting my head together, contacting labels, et cetera, et cetera.
Getting that picture taken. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But as soon, I knew that I needed to have something, you know.
Yeah.
You know, on departure, I needed to have something to carve a place for myself. So that's what I did.
Yeah, right out of the gate. Get those recordings mm-hmm. out. Get, you know, just get all the work you can. So then you move on from there. You have a couple of other things you do. You do a lot of ensemble work after that, it mm-hmm. seems like. You had the mm-hmm. the Havana album, the Havana Suite. Then you also... are with a string orchestra recording, all these different sort of projects that you did around that
because
time.
These are people I met. Most of them I met in my first year when I arrived in London. So all these projects were the fruit of me, you know, hanging out with these guys.
Yeah.
And that's how it worked out.
And the Havana album, are those people from, you know, the London School, or are those people from the conservatory? Or
no,
that seems more
Hamadi. No, Hamadi, the percussionist. He recorded all the percussion. He's from Cuba, so we had studied together in Havana.
Oh, you guys and, were yeah classmates there.
Two, 3 years. After my arrival in London, he moved to London.
Yeah. Oh.
And so he lives in London, and the violinist Emma, although she studied in at Royal College, I met her I met her through a friend that also went to Israel College, and then we had a long relationship.
And how, so, you know, at this point, you are doing a lot of solo work. You also have, you know, obviously the album with violin, you're playing some of the Piazzolla and so forth. What is your, you know, despite the fact that it's been canceled, what does your concert schedule look like? What is your current repertoire sort of? Obviously, we're talking about you playing your own music, which is, you know, by my estimation, the most important thing for people to do if they're able to produce. But what does your current sort of rep look like?
My rep, okay. Next year, I am preparing the yearly tour with Eduardo Martin. This is something I do. Then I'm also doing, I've been asked to do a lot of Nico Rojas because it's the 100th anniversary of his birth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do a lot of my work, my own works, and I'm going to do a lot of Walfrido. And I'm going to do a lot of guitar and flute as well, because these are things I would have done this year, but they moved. So most of my concerts are already, well, hopefully they will happen, but they are already transferred into 2021.
Yeah. Well, so what else, you know, we're kind of coming to the end of the episode at this point. Is there anything else that you'd kind of like to share with us? Anything that you're working on that, you know, we didn't talk about what's going on with the rest of your day?
Okay.
I mean, your day's over. It's 6 o'clock over there. It's 7 o'clock PM. Yeah.
Seven o'clock. I'm preparing a concert online.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be. I don't know. I still don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because apparently it's a concert in which different people from different countries would be collaborating in. So this is something I have to prepare now. I'm also working, helping, you know, put together the launch of an album with all the quartets by Eduardo Martin, all the guitar quartets. It will be going, it's going to be released very soon in a few weeks.
Oh, that's great. Those are great. And you're on one of those? You're part one of the quartet members on those recordings?
Yes. It's Eduardo Martin, Gali Martin, Iliana Matos, and myself. And I'm really looking forward to get this album out as well. And another album as well that should have been out in April, Guitar and Flute as well. It's a monographic album with all the work for flute and guitar by Eduardo Martin.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm putting all that there, and so that's pretty much what I'm working on.
That sounds great. And you have a strong relationship, I noticed, just from your bio and looking at, you know, stuff from you online with Eduardo Martin.
Mm-hmm.
How did that relationship start?
Well, he was one of my teachers in Cuba, and one of my last teachers, actually. I remember I used to go to his place because the lessons were about listening to music and learning about different tendencies, not necessarily classical music. Yeah. So a few students would go there, and although the lesson would normally be a 1 hour 30 something, we would spend 4 hours in there.
Yeah.
You know, the entire afternoon listening to music, talking about stuff, about, you know, music in films and jazz music and world music, whatever. So we would just go there and spend time brainstorming about, in a way, what we wanted to do with our careers, you know.
Yeah.
And since then, you know, I have really have a very close relationship with him. He surrounds himself with you know, talented, intelligent, nice, you know, people. And I have always wanted to be, and his music is, you know, fantastic.
Yeah.
So, and this is something that is the type of music that people ask me to do a lot. I mean, obviously, I know that it's, in a way, it's my fault because I decided to play a lot of his music.
Right.
But sometimes when people ask me, you know, festivals and, you know, music societies, they tell me, I want to hear this.
Right. They want to hear the Cuban stuff.
They want to hear this, you know, this album or this thing or that. And fine.
Okay, yeah, it's good if you can keep it all under your fingers. That's the only other thing. If you start working on something new and they ask you for something else, you know, I would always get people asking me to play Bach when I'm not playing Bach. And I'm like, no, not right now. Mm-hmm. But if you keep stuff under your fingers, it takes a lot of work. They don't understand, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But, well, you're doing great work, and it was wonderful to meet you. This is, you know, mm-hmm. this is, I don't know if you know that much, but you are you're the third guest. On the show. Mm-hmm. Usually I only do it live in New York, and I've been doing it that way for but this is great because I get to reach out to people who don't live here. It's really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when is this going live?
It's probably gonna go, I think I'm gonna release this week, if that's okay. What do you think?
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Absolutely, no. Yes.
Yeah, that way people can sort of, you know, look up and learn more about you. But yeah, usually I try to get it. There's like a week where I focus on it and I edit it, and then I throw it out there. Okay. That's the way it works. Sometimes I'll sit on something forever because something will come up and I'll have to move apartments or something. Mm. It doesn't happen all the time, but you know.
That's life, you know.
It is. Well, it was wonderful to meet you. Thanks a lot for joining me. That is it for my time with Ahmed. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I'll see you next time with Sean Shebe. All right, we're going to continue this new tradition of interviewing people from faraway places. If you want to, you can go ahead and donate to the show and keep an eye out for that new album of mine coming out, whether you're a Facebook friend or an Instagram friend. I guess you can become my friend now because I have something to sell you. All right, I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.